right back with more Dan Bernstein in 60 seconds on The Score.
Halloween, Friendsgiving, the holidays, the DrinkWorks Home Bar by Keurig is the perfect gift to help you host a gathering. The DrinkWorks Home Bar is a countertop home bar that makes over 30 cocktails, brews, ciders, and more, all at the push of a button. From mojitos to mules to margaritas, all you need to do is put the pod in and let the machine do the work. Go to DrinkWorks.com to order your home bar and see all the available drinks. That's DrinkWorks.com. Cheers. Keurig is a registered trademark of Keurig Green Mountain Inc. Use under license. DrinkWorks. Please enjoy responsibly.
Download the top-rated DraftKings at Casino Queen Sportsbook app and use code HILLS when you sign up to get a sign-up bonus up to $1,000.
Must be 21 or older. Illinois only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus and a first bet match each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-426-2537.
Ready to take on that painting project? Ask Sherwin-Williams and get 40% off paints and stains with sale prices starting at $23.09 October 16th through 19th. With 40% off our exceptional paints and stains, you can give some color love to your bathroom, living room, or every room in your home. Shop in-store or order online for curbside pickup. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
Mike, we use the phrase small sample size a lot about a lot of things. With that said, what should we make of Clayton Kershaw and his postseason foibles?
Some of it is true. Like, he's had some stinkers, there's no doubt about it. And some of it, if you really go dig deep, is just he's been put in terrible positions. He has been asked to start on three days rest a lot. Like, he's always compared to Madison Bumgarner, right? They have asked so much more of him than they asked of Bumgarner. There's been a ton of games where he was left with men on base because he was extended an inning further because they didn't trust their bullpen, and then the bullpen left those runs in, certainly. So the top line numbers, I think, are a little misleading. I'm not going to hand wave all this away. He's obviously had some bad games in the playoffs, for sure, but he's still Clayton Kershaw. You know, we saw him be dominant against the Brewers. We saw him be pretty good against the Padres. I have a hard time thinking anything that happens tonight is going to change his reputation at all. If he's terrible, well, then people will continue thinking that. And if he's great, people will still point to the times he wasn't. And I guess that's just how it works.
Sitting in for the vacationing Lawrence Holmes are Dan Bernstein and Marquee Network's Cole Wright.
Make me a bicycle clown!
Indeed we are. This is the Lawrence Holmes Show, but for the next couple hours, we will be manning the microphones in his stead. I'm Dan Bernstein. That is Cole Wright, whom you can follow on Twitter at Cole Wright. 312-644-6767 is our number. Looking forward to having a conversation at 125 with comedian and Daily Show correspondent and actor Roy Wood Jr., and I guess we'll commiserate about another Cubs ouster. I made the point before that you turn on the TV, you watch these other baseball teams, they keep continuing to hit, and the Cubs somehow don't feel like they're allowed to once the playoffs start.
Absolutely, and you know, Dan, it seems to be, I don't know if I'm the old dude in the barbershop, but you know, we see all this launch angle, and that's the new revolution, but I feel like that kind of takes away something from plate appearances. If you're trying to swing up and hit home runs, and this isn't just any team specific, this is all Major League Baseball. When guys are swinging for home runs, it's almost like I was sitting there talking with Herb just a little bit ago. I said, it's almost like spending a whole bunch of money this week because your game plan is winning the lottery next week. When you sit there and you wait on a home run, it doesn't seem like the best when it comes to thought processes. You know, you want to lay down, like, and Herb said he's anti-bunt. I don't know about you, I'm pro-bunt.
I'm virulently anti-bunt.
What?
If you, it's an out. You're giving an out away.
In the postseason, putting a man on third base with one out, I mean, the pitcher's mindset,
if it's the bottom of the 11th, and you're the bottom of your roster, Yes, but it has to be a very, very, very tight set of circumstances for me to justify giving away an out because of the math of outs and what they mean. If you don't make any outs, you score an infinite number of runs. I mean,
you're going to ultimately always make outs, and if it can advance a runner and put your team in a better position to push a run across, I mean, wild pitch. Ball lifted to right field.
I love
that
wild
guy
pitchers,
from third scoring.
But I will take the ball over the fence. I just the key to me, it's one thing to, I guess it's the semantics of waiting for a home run or hitting the home run. You know, it's that's the best thing you can do. It's one of the best things an individual can do in sports as far as value to a team in a game.
One of the hardest things to do in all sports
is hit
too.
A ball over the fence. If you know there are certain guys who are capable of doing it and everybody in your lineup can do it, if you actually look at who wins the World Series, it's the teams that hit the most home runs. And if you hit a 3-run homer in a game, mm-hmm. you have like a 75% correlation with victory. You know, that is the best thing you can do. I need to have guys on my team who don't stop doing it when the playoffs start. Because there's a lot of guys, if you look at their percentage of, you know, home runs per plate appearance, yep. I just need you to be you when it matters. And I think what's happening this year, too, is these teams are getting opportunities against something other than top two starters and top three high leverage relievers because there's no travel days. There's no time between games. So it's full rosters against full rosters and maybe affording some more of those opportunities.
You know, one thing that you said that jumped off the page to me is you said a 3-run home run. Those other guys have to get on base, yep. and getting on base, that's paramount. Now, whether it's via the bunt, whether it's hit by pitch, whether it's just a good old fashioned base hit. I mean, when you see the shift, when that's implemented, like, and you see an entire side of the field loaded up and nobody lays down a bunt, that's a free hit. That's almost a free hit for your batting average. Not just that, it's going to help your team. It's going to help your average.
FanGraphs wrote that up. Actually, there's a really good statistical analysis.
That word's the worst, isn't it?
The idea.
I try to stay away from it at all costs.
Of the idea of going against the shift in some way and how hard it is to do, even if everybody's over on the other side of the field. The idea of taking a base and being able to bunt it where you want is easier said than done, and still a high chance of it. The best thing you can do against the shift is what? Hit a home run, because then they can't defend it. And it doesn't count.
That's a crazy thought. I mean, I know that's all thought process right now.
That's what Ted Williams used to do. I mean, they shifted for Ted Williams regularly.
True. Ted Williams is a special hitter, though.
Yep. And he also knew he was not his. He even talked about it. So when they brought everybody over there, he said they can't do anything if I'm jogging around the bases. And that, because I also think it's weird that there's a stigma. There's sort of an anti-shifting stigma. We always hear it, especially on national broadcasts, where if somebody gets a hit, like Rizzo's done it before, too, mm-hmm. where he goes to his B hack and he'll squeak it and they'll say, see, that's what you can do every time. And that with the assumption being that's why shifting is bad. And then when Jose Abreu again hits an absolute screaming one hopper right over second base and there's a guy standing right there mm-hmm. to make the play, nobody applauds the positioning of the defense. You know, it's always like, see, well, that's because people are made uncomfortable by it for some reason. Where in every other sport, it's just defense. You know, in football, like, I mean, you work for the NFL Network long enough, nobody yep. would get mad if you're playing a big umbrella zone or playing a 3-deep coverage or you're playing a single high safety or zero coverage, because it's just defense. You put the guys where you think you can stop the other team. In baseball, it makes everybody mad.
Yeah. Well, Ted Williams, like you said, I think he was just good enough to hit through the shift. I mean, obviously the last guy to hit 400. And I just don't see enough players right now being solid enough as Ted Williams to say, hey, you know what? I'm just going to hit a bomb over this shift as opposed to just lay down, whether it's a knock the other way or a bunt the other way. I mean, I don't know. I'm team bunt.
Okay.
In JUCO, one time we got one hit and we won 3-1. So it's all about manufacturing. Winning is cool. I know bunts might not be as cool, but winning is.
Yeah, I just in general the numbers suggest ball go far, team go far. The correlation between the teams that hit home runs and the teams that win World Series, to me, it's impossible to ignore, even though it gets frustrating. It only seems to be the Cubs who have a problem with it, too. These other teams just keep doing it.
Do you think it's always been that way, though? If you go back to the beginning of time, the team that's hit more home runs, except for probably in the dead ball era, the team that's hit more bombs, they've probably won. And I don't think it's because guys are, you know, adapting to launch angle. I mean, if you go back until Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle or Frank Robinson or Stan Musial, hey, if you swing up – you're going to hit the ball out of the park. If they say, hey, how about I just swing level and put some backspin on it, it's going to jump out over the fence. I mean, those guys hit home runs too. They won World Series, but they didn't swing up.
You know who the first launch angle guy was?
Who was the first launch angle guy?
Ruth. Did it on purpose and told everybody he did. And it was considered...
swung a four-pound bat, too.
It was considered ungentlemanly. Okay. It was... And there were a lot of other hitters that said, oh, we could do that, too. You know, we could have been doing that the whole time, but that's not how the game is played. It was considered unsportsmanlike to play the game in that way when you were supposed to put it in play, run the bases. And it was actually probably more entertaining baseball, as we've learned. And Ruth said, no, nah, I'm going to swing up on the ball. I'm going to hit over the fence. And then everyone else said, well, if he's doing it, if you start looking at the numbers, they didn't correlate necessarily with a change in the baseball. They just said, oh, is this what we're supposed to be doing now? Okay. And Jimmy Fox and some of these other guys said, okay, we can do this too.
Yeah.
We're big, strong men and we can hit it over a fence. And so it began. It just, the larger question in my mind, Cole, is baseball isn't as entertaining or aesthetically pleasing because of velocity and because of what we understand about the value of the home run, right? We know that. We know we don't have balls in play. We don't have guys buzzing around the bases and guys stealing bases anymore. So the question is, do you play to win, which suggests hit it over the fence, get everybody throwing 100 miles an hour, or do you play to entertain your fan base? Ultimately, as long as you're competing, you have a responsibility for league best practices to do what's necessary to win, not to entertain, right? Not to provide something that's necessarily fun to watch. You'd be really fun to watch. You lose a bunch of games.
Sure. No, and that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, it's you know, when you look at just the home run generation, I feel like that's what we've entered. And you said guys throwing 100 miles an hour. It feels like every team can trot a guy out of their bullpen that throws triple digits these days. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to see that starting pitcher for as many turns in the lineup as you have once upon a time.
Nope.
So being able to just turn around to 100 to 103 mile an hour fastball, like you said, laying down a bunt, easier said than done. Yeah, hitting a bomb off 100 plus, that's a whole lot easier said than done. That's a whole lot harder than just laying down a bunt and putting things in play. And so when these guys are saying, hey, I'm just going to try to swing away, but everyone they're hitting off of is throwing, I mean, ungodly gas. That's going to be a problem.
I wonder about that, too. I wonder if it gives you more velocity to work with. If you can catch up to it, I wonder if you're transferring, if it means you can swing a little easier and the ball's still going to go because the pitcher's supplying more of the velocity.
I mean, that's true. I mean, if you put a good swing on a pitch that is a little bit up on the jugs gun, it's going to go a little bit further. But it's your ability to be able to pick that pitch out, pull the trigger and process all within the same. And if it's you see three different pitchers that all throw triple digits, your odds of being able to do that are going to, you know, they're going to increase or decrease exponentially.
I'm just wondering where we are 10 years from now with most players being able to hit for power and most pitchers being power pitchers. Starters are going to go once through and not a second time through, because look what's going on with the way they're matching up playoff bullpens. And if you have that kind of staff, this goes back years. I mean, 30 years ago when the closer was in the height of its popularity, right?
Sure.
This is, here comes the guy for the last three outs, and it takes a different kind of guy to get those last three, and those were your guys where you say, ooh, 96 and 97. And somebody said, well, why don't you just have a whole team of closers and they each pitch one inning every day? And people say, well, no, you can't do that, and they say, well, why not? And that's kind of what's happening now with the opener and with bullpenning.
True, but just because a guy throws hard doesn't automatically make him a closer.
Right.
I mean, there's something about a mentality that goes into being a closer. I mean, you have to be that guy. Something about closers, they're just a little bit off, whether it's a good way, a bad way, they welcome that pressure. Like, they want to be that guy. Okay, you know what? Put the game on my shoulders. That's just fine. I'm willing to lose this, but I'm also willing to run through that brick wall to go out there and win it.
The only counterargument to that is our increased understanding of the key leverage moment in a game. Mm-hmm. We used to just say, you know, like Ned Yost would set up a bullpen. I got my seventh inning, I got my eighth inning, I got my ninth inning. The game could be decided in the fifth.
That's true.
Because you have X number of leverage moments. If you look at the win expectancy matrices, and you can pinpoint exactly when those occur, and there could be two outs in the fifth. And that is the moment in the game where your best pitcher to get that out, the guy that's got, you know, however you want to phrase it, the guy who has the mentality, says, give me the ball, put the game on my shoulders. now we know better. That's when the game is on somebody's shoulders. You can't decide it's the ninth inning. You know, you can't make the those outs matter more in the ninth inning when, in fact, all of a sudden, here's their cleanup hitter with the bases loaded and two out in the bottom of the fifth. And it's the manager saying, this is the out I need because this is where the game is decided, because there are four, five, six inflection points in every game when it's decided. That's when some of these gutsy managers are saying, all right, nope, thank you, give me the ball. We got a guy to get this out. And it's not the ninth, but yeah. come in, do the job we're paying you to do and get him.
I think that's why they want solid middle relief guys these days. And I think feel like the middle relief guys, they haven't been what we've been used to seeing, because there are so many specialty pitchers these days. Mm-hmm. And I mean, now with everyone having to see three batters every time they go out there, you know, there's no longer that lefty-lefty matchup. There's no longer those guys who can go out there and say, all I need to get is one out. Okay, cool. My job is done for the day. And we don't see that. And you know, maybe that's good, maybe it's bad for baseball, because then it makes pitchers have to think a little bit more. Okay, yeah. This is what I need to do. How do I pitch to this guy, that guy, and the next guy, because I'm not just going to get out of this one scot-free.
See, I think where we're going, and these playoffs tell us that, because of the way guys like Kevin Cash mm-hmm. know how to match guys up and have a plan from the moment the game starts, and you'll see guys warming up in the second inning. And I think it's going to take some time to get there because of human nature. But The way I would envision it is, we're not going to have starters or relievers. You're going to be a pitcher, and you will be stretched out to for over a certain period of time, certain time of the year, however you're expected to be used, and you're going to have a lot of churn, like we're seeing this year with the secondary sites, of fresh arms coming in, yeah. of using options, of using younger and younger players when they're throwing harder and harder. You're going to see more movement of these optionable players to AA, AAA, or if we even have AA and AAA at that point, where sure. the way things are going, that it's just a pitching staff. And whether you're called upon for three outs here or six outs here, beginning of a game, end of a game, all fluid. And it's going to take a lot of time to evolve to that. But then you're not going to have somebody say, well, I'm a starter and I go twice through the order, or I'm just a closer and I come into the ninth. When that manager gets you up and puts you in, you get people out until he comes and takes you out.
Is that just a sign of the times, or will that be I think baseball's trending?
I think it's efficient, and I also think it's cost efficient. Because
I was gonna say, there's going to be no longer big contracts. But to me, it's still crazy that the highest paid players in the game are starting pitchers. You play once every fifth day,
yep.
and you're getting paid more than position players that play 162 games. Like that to me, Scott Boras, I mean, you know, bless him, because the way he's been able to pay these guys all this money, and they're not position players. And you know, think about the aches and the pains yep. and everything that goes in yep. to playing 162 yep. games a year. And how many guys do we even see play 162 games a year anymore?
And look,
it's a rare occurrence.
If you know who some of these agents should thank too, they should thank former Chicago Tribune sports writer Jerome Holtzman, who invented the save stat, which is a terrible statistic. And it doesn't really measure how good somebody is at something, but it got a lot of closers paid mm-hmm. a lot of money. And then they invented the hold stat. They got some eighth inning guys paid a lot of yeah. money. So if what we're understanding about
the hold, though, more convoluted than the save.
It is.
Would you agree?
I would, but I also think the save is a bad stat, mm-hmm. and it's why we don't really use it as much anymore, because understanding the guy that got that high leverage out in the fifth can be more responsible for the guy who got three routine outs with your team up two in the ninth, because it just the leverage wasn't the same. And they, going forward, if you just have pitchers, you aren't going to have a premium on certain guys who do certain things. And with everybody throwing 100, they're all hurt. And it's all a matter of time before their arms fall off, because it's not natural to be throwing this hard. So that way, you're not committed. You know, you don't have the dead money on a guy waiting a year and a half for him to get back from elbow surgery or shoulder surgery. And that way, you just move on to the next guy throwing 100. And you keep drafting and you keep developing, and it's going to save you a ton of money in the long run. And like you say, you can spend all your good money on your young position players.
Well, maybe all these guys throwing 100 and getting hurt is going to be a cautionary tale down the road, almost like plastic surgery. If you get too much plastic surgery, you'll be walking around looking like Mickey Rourke. No disrespect to Mickey Rourke, but
obvious disrespect.
Well, I mean, everyone knows that Mickey yes. Rourke's had a few processes done, and you know, we've seen him in The Wrestler, and you know, maybe it's added to him being able to play some of those bit character roles.
He was really good in The Wrestler,
absolutely, so, yeah. And it, maybe that's, like I said, a cautionary tale. Do you want to be with that next guy that throws 100 and only plays for 2 years, or would you rather be that guy that throws 93, 94, 95 and has a 10, 11, 12, maybe 15-year Hall of Fame career? I mean, it's...
I don't think velocities are going down.
I don't think they're necessarily going down, but I don't think there's going to be... If you see everyone that throws triple digits get hurt, maybe guys will say, you know what? Okay, maybe it's not always how hard you throw. Maybe it's where you throw. Like, what did Greg Maddux say? What does he try to do? Change speeds, yep, and locate. And that's really all he needed. I mean, we've seen it with Kyle Hendricks on opening day. Kyle Hendricks.